Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing all right, Jim. I was rejuvenated from a rare 70-degree day in February here in St. Louis, so that was good, but the cold is coming back. So good thing I got outside and enjoyed it while it lasted.
That's Mother Nature teasing you, Dustin. Just throwing exactly. In a day like that to tease you about what's to come. But hey, it's not too long. I mean, we're only a couple months away from spring football games.
I know that's an exciting thing. And we got a list of really good events coming up in the next month. We got the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament, baseball season underway, and then spring football. So really, we just have to get through February.
That's right. And it's a short month, so we could tolerate it. But we talk spring football. I didn't mean to top the show with this, but we've got spring football coming everywhere except perhaps Nebraska.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if it was a surprise announcement, but these are the situations you get yourself into with this day and age, with the NIL and the transfer portal and everything else. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if we see more teams and programs start to go this direction. What's interesting to me, though, is that Iowa has also done this before. And it's interesting to me that the Big Ten Network, considering the lack of events that are happening at that time of year, isn't just going to say, yeah, you're actually going to televise something.
Well, for those who don't know where we're headed with this, Nebraska and Matt Rhule has said he had concern because other teams will be watching the game and looking to poach some of their players. To me, I'm sorry, Dustin, that seems like a really weak argument. Couple things. First of all, does Nebraska have all that many great players that everybody else is looking to poach them, number one? And number two, are there players that, you know, all along, gee, we never had any interest in this player, never noticed him. Oh, my goodness, look at how he played in the blue, or I say blue-white, I'm ready to say, because that's what Penn State calls their spring game. And what's interesting, using Penn State's history, it's like a running joke of what walk-on running back will end up being the MVP of the spring game, and that's his one day of glory. So are teams going to start poaching Penn State's walk-on running backs now because they're watching the spring game?
Look, I've said this before. I don't rule anything out anymore. I think there's a lot of tampering that happens in college football. I think there's any way you can get an edge, I think, is what's happening now. So I don't know that it's going to be like a rampant issue or a big problem. I don't know. Maybe it's a disguise. Maybe it's a beard for another reason as to why they don't want to do it. I don't know what that reason would be. But I'm going to be very frank with you, Jim. I don't care. Spring games don't interest me at all, which is a terrible thing to say on a talk show when we talk about spring football. But like you said, it's basically just glorified scrimmage, right? So I think it's fun for the fans. I think it's great for those kids who are like the freshmen, the transfers. It gives them a chance to kind of get into the rhythm of the offense, understand what it's going to be like. But do you know how many times I've written a story saying this team looks really good or this team looks really bad, and then it just doesn't turn out that way? You can't take too much from a spring game anyway. So I'm not too upset over this, but I don't know. I don't know if that's the real reason or not.
My take on it, Dustin, is spring games are for the fans. Gives them something, gives them a little taste of football, a little taste of the program. Maybe you see a couple players that you wouldn't otherwise see. again, using Penn State as the example in this spring game, this year, if you're going to that spring game to see Drew Aller or Nick Singleton or Katron Allen or Deny Dennis Sutton or Zane Durant, you're going to be very disappointed. Okay.
Right.
What it is an opportunity to see, hey, maybe we get to see Ethan Grunkmeyer chuck the ball around a little bit. Okay. Maybe you get to see a freshman running back or any of the last year, the biggest takeaway that we had from the spring game was incoming freshman offensive lineman Cooper Cousins. Okay. That was what we were most anxious to see. So that's what the spring game is about. This whole, they're going to cancel it. I feel bad for the Nebraska fans if the game's canceled. It's an event. It's for the fans, a chance to have some fun. All right. I didn't mean to get off on a Nebraska tangent, but I just wanted to get your take on it. Let's switch over to the rest of the Big Ten, and let's talk about the top of the pecking order, Dustin. And it's interesting. They mean absolutely nothing, these way too early top 10, top 20, top 25 rankings, but I eat them up, okay? I sure. go look at every one of them. And it's fascinating to me to see, it appears Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon are really at the top of the pecking order. I know a lot of this has to do with where teams finished last year. It seems like they just put them right back in there. But I think it's warranted that respect those three teams are getting. What's your take? Are they worthy of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think when you look at the recruiting classes that they bring in, when you look at the transfer portal halls that they have, I think the interesting thing is going to be some of the adjustments, particularly with Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State now is have to replace both of their coordinators from last year. Jim Knowles, who obviously went to Penn State, and then Chip Kelly, who is now off to the NFL. But Jim, I've said this long before, and I'll say it again. I think being the offensive coordinator at Ohio State has to be the easiest job in college football. Like, you probably just are like, yeah, look, that sounds good. I'm sure Ryan Day is doing a majority of that work. So, but it will be interesting to see how a new coordinator on both sides of the ball, how that impacts what Ohio State's going to do, what kind of chemistry that staff has. It doesn't sound like it was great in Columbus, but they won a national championship. So even if it's not good, those kids and that staff was able to fight through it. And so that's a good sign. I think Penn State will see what happens with Jim Knowles. They've got a ton of returning talent from last year's team. And then Oregon has, you know, been pretty successful under Dan Lanning. I know he hasn't been there a long time, but they continue to pull in good transfers. They continue to put out a good product every year. So I do think that those three teams have earned the benefit of the doubt. And especially now when you just know nothing about the right. Like, you don't know who's going to pan out in the transfer portal. You don't know who's going to pan out in recruiting. You don't know who's going to leave, whether it be in the winter or the spring. So based on prestige and basically this is, do you trust the head coaches? And I think over a period of time, yes, you trust all three of those head coaches that these are going to probably be top 10, top 15 football programs next season.
I want to get back to that, but you brought up Ohio State and what's going on there, losing both coordinators. They also lost their offensive line coach, correct?
Yes.
So what is happening there is, you know, we followed here the Jim Knowles saga. And there was a lot of talk about he and Larry Johnson not getting along great. Larry Johnson, the former Penn State defensive line coach, now Ohio State line coach. What is going on?
Well, I kind of thought about this, and I'm going to speak on the Larry Johnson, Jim Knowles situation, because I feel like I have an idea of what happened there. And this is not inside intel. This is just from, you know, the 1,000-foot overview. My guess is, Jim, Larry Johnson has been there for a long time, and what has been Ohio State's greatest strength, it's been the defensive line. Like, they get edge rushers left and right They're very successful. That's a big part of what they do. I don't know if they're, if you have to pick between those two guys, I don't know that Jim Knowles is going to be able to land those type of recruits like Larry Johnson has. So do you think you can bring in another defensive coordinator who can do what Jim Knowles did? I don't know, but I think if you're Ryan Day, you trust your offense enough and say, if we have a good enough defense, we'll still be very competitive in the Big Ten and in the college football playoff. If we don't get those type of recruits that Larry Johnson's been getting on the defensive line, we might be in some trouble. And so I think that that was ultimately the decision. Like, if you have to choose between these two guys because they're not getting along, then who are you going to take? And I think Ryan Day's saying, I want Larry Johnson. I don't know in terms of the offense. I don't know that Chip Kelly was ever going to be there long term. I don't know that that was his plan. I think he's just kind of done with the college game, wants to get back to the NFL. It seems like he's kind of over this NIL transfer portal era and wants to just coach football, even though he wasn't overly successful as a head coach. I think going into the league as an offensive coordinator or position coach is probably what's best for him. So, like, that one, I think it was surprising because of the timing. And anytime you win a national championship and basically your staff is overhauled. But, again, this is like when your coaches get poached, that's always a good sign. Like, it's just a little bit odd that he goes from Ohio State to Jim Knowles, that is, goes from Ohio State to Penn State, because a lot of people would consider that a lateral move. Some might consider that a teeny tiny step back. So that makes it more interesting. But the Chip Kelly thing, I am not – to me, that was writing on the wall. That was probably going to happen. He wasn't going to be there very long anyway, in my opinion.
Well, that teeny tiny setback for Jim Knowles, I think he's got about 3 million reasons to get over it. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And some of the other things that you hear coming out of Ohio State's camp, while he was contemplating leaving, they didn't want him to go to the national championship celebration. Little things like that. You could see there was more going on than just looking for the biggest payday. And I'm with you also with Chip Kelly. He's not the first guy who, when given the opportunity to make the jump these days from college to the NFL and put behind you completely all of this NIL and transfer portal stuff that goes on, it's hard to blame him for making that move.
Yeah, I don't blame. I think going to the NFL is a much easier gig for him. He has experience with it. It's very hard when you have, unless you're Nick Saban, right, to go from the NFL back to college and kind of live that 24/7 lifestyle. It's just a different thing, and I think he's ready to just be an NFL assistant coach or offensive coach.
All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter number one. Lots more to go. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Big Ten football, and Dustin is the right guy to talk to about that. He knows everything about the Big Ten. So I'm going to keep quizzing them. All right. We were talking earlier in the first segment, Dustin, about Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, all being shown a lot of respect for next season. And many, if not all of those early projections, they are all three of them top five teams. First of all, is this a tipping point between the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference? I think this past season, if you look at it as unbiased as possible, the Big Ten, I think, exceeded the Southeast Conference. There's no doubt they did it with number of teams in the playoffs, multiple teams in the Final Four, and ultimately the national champion, which, by the way, gives the Big Ten back-to-back national championships. But for the last decade or so, it's been Southeast Conference definitively number one, Big Ten number two. Are we seeing a change in the top of the hill?
I think so. It's hard to tell because there was a period of time, and I can't remember. I think it was maybe Florida State and then Clemson, or there was some brief period there where two non-SEC schools did not win the national championship. And you got to wondering, like, is the SEC's reign of dominance over? Those, they were still successful in those seasons. They just didn't win the national championship. So we will see. But what's interesting to me, Jim, is I think the last 2 years, you could probably say that the Big Ten was better than the SEC. At least, obviously, they had the best team in college football the last 2 years. And this year, they, to me, it was not even close. Like, the Big Ten was leaps and bounds better than the SEC. And I think you saw that in the playoff, in the bowl season. And then if you go back and look at the regular season, like, none of the, there wasn't really a signature win. If you want to count Missouri over Iowa, be my guest. If you want to count Alabama over Wisconsin, a 5-7 team, be my guest, whatever you wanted. But the Big Ten dominated in bowl season. The thing that's been interesting to me over these last 2 years, Jim, there's always been kind of these whisperings and these beliefs, probably founded in some truth, that the reason the SEC was so good is because there was some Benjamin Franklin's exchanging hands. And now that it's become legal, it's very interesting to me that Big Ten now is the dominant conference and the SEC is probably number two. It's just like you have bigger universities, you have larger alumni bases, you have more people willing to donate money to the NIL, to the collectives, to all this other stuff. And the Big Ten, you know, I don't know how that revenue sharing thing is going to work. That's way over my head. Like, let's not ever talk about that specifically. But the Big Ten, in terms of their television contract, does have the upper hand in what in those regards. So now that you see the money is flowing into the Big Ten and they're able to use those same incentives, we'll call it, as the SEC had presumably been using for years, although it wasn't legal. I think there was a McDonald's bag situation involving Tennessee several years ago that got them into a little bit of hot water. But that's just always an interesting factor to me. Like, now that the playing field is level, it looks like the Big Ten is the best conference. And so we'll see. We'll see if it continues into these next couple years.
I do think the Big Ten has caught up in a lot of ways, or maybe the SEC has come back. And the reason why I say that is I believe what made the SEC the dominant team over that last decade or so was at the very top, Alabama and Georgia were the absolute dominant teams. Alabama, after losing Nick Saban, and it was probably unfair to even expect Nick Saban to do what he did in the last decade going forward. And, you know, has Georgia come back to the pack a little bit? And when I mentioned Nick Saban, the reason why I even feel that way is take a look at a couple other dominant teams. A little, not too terribly long ago, you might have put Clemson in with that group. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, has Dabo Sweeney lost his magic? Nah, he's just come back to the pack. And that always ultimately happens to those couple teams who dominate. So I think expecting Alabama and Georgia to stay at that elite level forever, that just wasn't going to happen. Now with them back down to earth and how much that has to do with NIL and transfer portal, who knows? But I do think they're back to the pack. I'm not going to declare victory for the Big Ten, but I would at least put them on par with each other now, which makes things interesting going forward. Let's get back to the Big Ten. Now, I mentioned Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon as the three teams getting the most respect going into next season. If you would add a fourth team, Dustin, from the Big Ten, who would it be?
Why do you have to do this to me, Jim? I'm supposed to be the smart one. You're going to make me look dumb. I really don't know. I don't know if I have a definitive fourth team at this moment. Here's what I would say, though. Illinois won 10 games last season. They've got a lot coming back. And when you look at their schedule just at a glance, pretty favorable. I think Iowa as a team, they made improvements on the offensive side of the football last season, but Caleb Johnson, their star running back, is gone. So what do they look like? Can Indiana repeat what they did? But they had a lot of fifth, sixth, even seventh year guys on that roster who were gone from the 2024 11-2 team. That's tough. Michigan played really well at the end of the season. I don't know how much I trust Sherrone Moore. So that's what, three, four teams I've given you? Like, I don't. My gut tells me Illinois. If I had to put another fourth team in there that would kind of be play that Indiana role this season, I think Illinois is going to be that team. But I'm interested to see what Michigan does this year, because there's no doubt, like, those were two different teams. First four games and their last four games, completely different teams.
Well, I let me tell you why I asked for a fourth team, because we're going to get to looking at the Big Ten schedule. And what I – this is called the Jim's plan, okay? This is,
I like this.
This is how Jim looks at schedules. And I did it last year in the Big Ten. I did it in the Southeast Conference. I like to take the four best teams in the conference – and then the next four best when judging a schedule. How many games do you have against tier one? How many games do you have against tier two? And the rest, I don't care. If you're a good team, you shouldn't care either, okay, about the rest. So, so when I determine how tough a schedule, I need to name that top four and second four. And I got the first three teams like you without a problem, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, and I couldn't find that fourth team. Gun to my head, I probably would have said Michigan, and I'm basing it partly on history, partly on how they played at the end of the season. They took down both Ohio State and Alabama in their final regular season game and their bowl game. But what that leads us to then, Dustin, let's just use Illinois as one of the top four teams, okay? I'm going to concede the point to you there. Who are the next four teams that are in tier two? And just to help you out and let you think about it a little bit, here are the nominees, okay, for that next four. Okay. Yep. I've got Washington, USC, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Indiana, and Michigan. What's that, like eight teams or so, okay?
Yeah, you're really narrowing it down there.
Well, if you're smarter than me, Dustin, if you know what your four are, just give me those four, okay? Nothing's holding me back here. Remember, in this host-guest kind of relationship, I'm just the guy asking the questions. You're the guy with the answers, Dustin.
I have so many of them.
just reciting the eight teams back to me, Dustin, is not an answer.
Oh, man, it's not an answer, darn it. Okay, I'm going to say Michigan and USC. I would put probably Iowa in that category. Man, don't trust Wisconsin. I'm going to say Minnesota.
Ooh. So you're dissing Indiana.
Yeah, I am. I just think that when you have that many guys that were on your roster, that played for you at James Madison and then have graduated, I know that they've got players returning. But when you have so many of those players gone from that team, there was so much chemistry. They knew exactly what they were doing. I think Indiana will still be good. I just don't know if they're going to be 9-win good. I think all those teams I mentioned could potentially hit 9 wins.
It's interesting. So you named USC, Iowa, Minnesota, and Michigan as that tier two. Now, fortunately for us, there's no wrong answer in this. This is February. Yeah, right. And it's not like, Dustin, I'm going to keep these notes and hold them over your head come October next year. Okay. I'm not that way. Okay. I
appreciate that.
That would be vindictive and petty and low. And that's just not me. Well, maybe a little bit, but anyway, so what makes it interesting now is the teams Washington, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Indiana, or the four teams you left out of this tier two group. Who do you regret leaving out?
Probably, I'll give you, I think Indiana and Nebraska would be the two next. I really just don't trust Wisconsin. I haven't seen anything from Luke Fickell that would, in his time at Wisconsin, that would lead me to believe that they're going to be successful next season. So I think Nebraska, even though it was just 6-6, they did get to that bowl game, won their bowl game. They took a step in the right direction. And obviously Indiana had the best season they've ever had. So I think that those two teams are going to be right on that cusp of that second tier next season.
All right. I've got the notes taken down here. I will set them aside. And maybe, just maybe, bring them back when we hit the fall, Dustin. All right, that is it for quarter number two. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the quarterback position in the Big Ten. Obviously, the most important position means a lot. We're going to take a look at that when we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Big Ten football. Dustin, when we wrapped up quarter number two, we were talking about teams that the way I put it, I have a tier one, which we both felt Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. We both, I think, struggled with putting a fourth team in that tier one. Then tier two, candidly, I think we both would like to put about 9 or 10 teams in there. It was tough to get it down to four. But in year four, you didn't have Wisconsin in that four, which just led a little bit to the conversation. I thought the Luke Fickell hire in Wisconsin was just a perfect fit after his success at Cincinnati. So I've really been stunned that so far that mix just hasn't worked, Luke Fickell at Wisconsin.
Yeah, I am a little bit surprised by that too. I think when you look at the success he had at Cincinnati, taking them to a college football playoff as a group of five team, undefeated regular season, I think a lot of people thought when he got to Wisconsin, they were going to jump up into the next tier, because for so long, Wisconsin had been at the top of the Big Ten, but kind of couldn't get over that hump. They couldn't win a Big Ten title, couldn't get into the college football playoff, despite having a lot of success and some really good teams. But through the first 2 years, there's been no signs that this program is moving forward. And now maybe that changes in year three. I think a lot of that has to do with the offensive side of the ball, because for years, Wisconsin prided itself on running the football, big offensive linemen, in-state guys who maybe aren't the most heavily recruited, but they're those big, you know, cheese-eating, hay-baling farm kids, right, from Wisconsin. And they're just big, burly, and they know how to move guys off the football. And so gotten away from that a little bit. They wanted to implement more of an air raid style of offense, or a pro style of offense, and it just hasn't clicked. Now maybe moving on from Phil Longo will change some of that, but they brought in Tanner Mordecai, who was a mobile quarterback who could throw the football, and he was successful in his previous stops and just didn't work out at Wisconsin. They brought in Tyler Van Dyke, who had basically one good season at Miami, thought maybe he would fit the offense, didn't work out. So I think you've got to do some self-assessment here if you're Luke Fickell, And I think you've got to get back to what, you know, Paul Crist and Brett Bielema and Barry Alvarez did back in the day, even Gary Anderson. Get a really good running back and run the football behind those big guys. Now, they need to improve their passing attack if they want to be a Big Ten contender and get into the college football playoff and things like that. But you've got to get back to your bread and butter, and you've got to be able to beat your rivals and get to 8-9 wins and show that this program is moving forward. Because, again, through the first two seasons, it just hasn't been pretty up in Madison.
Cheese eating, hay baling. My goodness, are we stereotyping there, Dustin?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm from the Midwest, too, so it works. I'm allowed to say these things. I just have none of those characteristics.
But I think you're right, though. It's like you got to know who you are. And this is how we play. This is who we are. And to change that image, it can be very difficult for a football team to do it. And, you know, that run first team, like you had mentioned previously to me about Notre Dame showing, you know, they were a run first team. I think we saw that Penn State's best run at the end of the season was running the ball. And I think we're going to see more of that next season with what they have coming back. But let's turn this, even with being a run first team, you got to be able to throw the ball some. Okay. You're not going to win a national championship playing the way Army and Navy did for many years, although both those teams were throwing the ball around a little bit. I'm trying to segue to the quarterback position in the Big Ten. And I think it's fascinating, and it's probably a conversation you could expand to the rest of college football. But starting with the Big Ten, we saw Ohio State and Oregon both bring in veteran quarterbacks, guys who started elsewhere, had experience, and came on over. And we've seen that throughout college football. You can succeed with a transfer quarterback. The year before, we saw with Michael Penix and Bo Nix. Yep. This coming year seems to be a bit different. I don't think Ohio State and Oregon are going to be bringing in somebody in the portal, a veteran. They just weren't that many of them out there. I mean, Carson Beck, who went from Georgia to Miami, weren't too many others. So where are Ohio State and Oregon going to turn? Obviously, it's got to be internal, and it's got to be a young guy.
Yeah, and that's going to be the interesting part of this. Like, for Ohio State, like all Ryan Day has done is produce caliber quarterbacks, whether those have been transfers like Justin Fields or Will Howard, or whether it's been guys that you've had in the program for a few years, Dwayne Haskins, CJ Stroud. He's had really good quarterbacks. So it's like, if you bring in Julian Sayin, is he going to be the number one guy? Is he going to be your guy? Is he going to be your next, you know, long-term starter? I think you trust Ryan Day in their quarterback development. And Jim, by the way, as we've talked about numerous times, really helps when you have the best wide receivers in the history of the sport every year. Like, it's just, they just keep reloading at that position. So it makes it a lot easier. I think what's going to be maybe more intriguing is, what does Ohio State look like on the offensive line? So you're ushering in a lot of new faces up front. You're ushering in a new face at quarterback. But again, when you have Jeremiah Smith to throw to, it does make life a little bit simpler. On the Oregon side, I don't know, but it's one of those things where, you know, you've talked about a lot of times earlier in this show, we've talked about giving teams the benefit of the doubt because of the history, because of their coach, because their lineage of success. And I just can't get over this, that you look at Bo Nix at Auburn and just a completely different quarterback. He was Bo Nix at Oregon, Heisman Trophy contender. And I just think Oregon's going to get that position figured out no matter who's there. Like, I think their offense, they don't have to throw the ball deep. Those guys have a lot of athletes. And I think you saw it last season with Dylan Gabriel, was he could stretch the field in times when he needed to. But a lot of times it's an extension of the run game. It's a screen pass. It's a shuffle pass. It's, you know, here's the ball 3 yards out. I'm going to need you to pick up 8 or 9. And he had the receivers to do that. Now, we'll see if they still have the same skill level. You have to have a smooth operation to be able to do that. But I think that Oregon's offense is quarterback friendly enough to where I don't want to say anybody can come in there and be successful, but I think if you have that specific skill set, I think you can go in there even as an average quarterback and put up a lot of yards and be really efficient in their passing attack.
Well, Oregon has this Dante Moore, who, and I differentiate. You mentioned like Justin Fields was a transfer to Ohio State. He was, but I think it was after 1 year at Georgia. So he was not a starter at Georgia. He was a young guy who was developed at Ohio State. Bo Nix was a starter, several-year starter at Auburn before he got to Oregon. Dante Moore, even though he may have started at UCLA as a young, he didn't come right in as a transfer with 3 years starting experience to come to Oregon like Dillon Gabriel was. So I think it is in the same thing Julian saying for Ohio State, who we assume will be the starter, came from Alabama, but again, was not this veteran. So I think that's the difference. And I guess my question leads to is just how valuable or how important is it to have that veteran quarterback coming in to lead your team, whether you developed him yourself or he's coming in from outside?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I mean, I think you look at the improvement that you saw from Drew Aller from year one to year two, and that's what helped Penn State get to the Big Ten championship game and then ultimately into the college football playoff. I think having a veteran guy is significant. But again, when you have the level of talent of Ohio State or Oregon, don't get me wrong, the quarterback position is still the most important in college football, but I just feel like it makes their job so much easier. And we saw a few years ago with Kyle McCord, right? He was, at that time, I believe he was a young starter, right? He came in immediately after C.J. Stroud. And a lot of people, he had a perfectly fine season, but he didn't have an elite season. And that's why they weren't able to beat Michigan. That's why they weren't able to get into the college football playoffs. So I think it is important. I don't know that it's critical, but I think teams that have a veteran guy returning under center have an advantage. But again, it's when you have Ryan Day and Dan Lanning, those two coaches have proven to be really good offensive coaches, and the way that their system operates, it's very friendly to the passer. And again, I'll just keep saying it, even though I sound like a broken record, when you have all that talent around you, it does make your life easier.
Oh, it certainly does. And it makes me think, I saw someone mention Jeremiah Smith and said, who should have entered the portal? Not so much that he wants to leave Ohio State, but just find out what your market value is.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not like, you know, I think a lot of places, once a kid hits the portal, they wash their hands of them. You know, you chose to go. You can't come back. I don't think that would be the case with him. So one might even argue Penn State's $3 million that they sent to Jim Knowles. maybe they should have saved that for a run at Jeremiah Smith. All right, again, we're talking about the quarterbacks, and Ohio State and Oregon are going to have to replace their veteran quarterbacks. I think two teams that we talked about as that next level, who belongs with the upper echelon, teams Michigan and Indiana, it's interesting, is Michigan brought in, and it was highly publicized, Bryce Underwood, the highest-rated quarterback in this class. Is he going to be the guy? And then over at Indiana, they brought in Curtis Rourke, a veteran last year. Well, they kind of did the same thing again this year. They brought in Fernando Mendoza, veteran quarterback from Cal. How do you look at those two teams and their different quarterback choices?
Yeah, very intrigued to see, maybe more so Bryce Underwood at Michigan. And this isn't like the old days where you have a freshman that comes in and starts and you just kind of assume they're going to struggle a little bit, or maybe they're going to use a wrench this year. I think the goal, considering how poorly Michigan's quarterback play was a season ago, I think the goal is to get him to start immediately and just kind of get him learning, maybe not so much for year one, but then for year two and beyond. I think that's the goal. At Indiana, look, Curtis Rourke came into a new system, that Kurt Cignetti and Shanahan ran and did wonders. I don't know that they're going to be in the same situation, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has a similar level of success as Curtis Rourke.
All right, that's it for quarter number three. Dustin, quarter four, we're going to take a look at the Big Ten schedule for next season. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante, talking Big Ten football. And as promised, Dustin, we are going to talk about the Big Ten schedule. And Dustin, I think we learned, didn't we, last year that with these expanded conferences, a schedule is so critical. You could end up with a soft schedule or something that is very, very difficult.
Yeah, and being in Indiana, like at the time, you could not have had two vests. Now, obviously, Purdue was terrible, and Indiana was pretty good. You also couldn't have had more different schedules. Purdue played Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Indiana, played Candyland all season. So, yeah, it could really make or break your season depending on how some of this stuff plays out.
It really can. And I'll tell you what, I talked earlier about when I do the schedules and try to see who I think has the toughest schedule. To make things easier, I put a tier one, maybe the top four teams in the conference, a tier two, the next four teams, and I use that to measure. And what I found was it was even more disparity in the Southeast Conference. It was absolutely crazy last year. And I don't know if it's because they only have an eight-game schedule. You could have more of a disparity than with the nine-game schedule like you do in the Big Ten. But if you want to see something interesting, and I thought it was really fascinating, Texas and Oklahoma going into the Southeast Conference for the first year, night and day. It was like They wanted Texas to win the conference, and they really didn't want Oklahoma to win. So there is a great difference. So, Dustin, you and I each have up the Big Ten football schedule in front of us and kind of want to lean on that tier one, tier two type thing. But before we get there, how about out-of-conference schedule? Where are the top games out-of-conference? Who among the Big Ten teams is willing to play a tough out-of-conference schedule?
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, these games are scheduled well in advance, so it's always hard to kind of line up and know who's going to be who, but Michigan, who played Texas, is now going to play Oklahoma this season. You look at Illinois, and Duke isn't a powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, but they're willing to go out of conference and play an ACC team. Purdue and Notre Dame have kind of restored their rivalry. Ohio State willing to play Texas. Willing to play Texas this year, Wisconsin against Alabama. There's some good games on that schedule this season, but I think you've talked about, Jim, at this point, when you get a 12-team field, why not go undefeated? So there's a lot of bad schedules on this list, but there are some interesting. I didn't think Michigan State at Boston College last year, that was kind of a sneaky good game. I think you could see something similar again this year, as Jonathan Smith and Bill O'Brien both enter their second seasons at their respective schools as well.
And when talking about toughest schedules, big games, Dustin, I got to correct you because I think you completely overlooked Penn State's schedule against Nevada, FIU, and Villanova.
I mean, if that's not just the easiest, I mean, they're in their competition there with Indiana, Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, Indiana State. Look, James Franklin said, I don't know if it was this past year or a couple years ago, but basically you want to win as many games. The goal is to go undefeated, because if you go undefeated, you're going to get into the 12-team playoff. And he mentioned, I think he took a shot at Indiana, you know, rescheduling, canceling their game against Louisville to add, like, Kennesaw State, Old Dominion, Indiana State. So, again, as you said, Big Ten, you play 9 conference games. You're guaranteed 9 FBS games. And you look at Penn State's rest of the schedule, they've got Oregon. They've got to go on the road to play UCLA, which wasn't good, but that's still a West Coast trip. Iowa, Ohio State. So those are some pretty good teams that they're going to have to play. So why not try to load up on this, on the wins, and get some confidence rolling early in the season?
I get that. I'm still – it's an embarrassing out-of-conference schedule for Penn State.
I was just going to ask, do you hate – as a fan, somebody who goes to the games, how much do you despise it?
Oh, my God, like you can't believe. And, and in fact, it taints my take on it, because it's, why are you putting me through this?
Yeah.
And you mentioned a couple of games. Now, I was looking more like at the top end, like what Michigan and Ohio State are doing. But you mentioned like Michigan State taking on BC, Illinois taking on Duke. Hey, if Penn State were to play those teams, again, you would expect them to win, but it could at least be a competitive game. And over the last few years, they've played West Virginia. They've played Auburn. Now, those are games you do expect to win those games, Dustin, but at least it's a competitive game. And as a fan base, I remember when they got Auburn at home, the fan base was thrilled by this. It was really something to see. And even the West Virginia game was important, or it felt that way. You're playing a team with a pulse. So going back to your question, as a fan, I hate those games. Hate them. Hate that scheduling, Dustin.
Yeah, I would hate it too. And I get it. Like, for the first game of the season, everybody's excited for football. They're going to come out and enjoy it no matter what. But after that, it's just like, you look at week one and what, Ohio State, Texas is really the only game that's of interest. I mean, I guess Nebraska, Cincinnati. See, there you go. Penn State even put a Cincinnati on the schedule, or UCF or something like that, I think it draws a little bit more intrigue. Those are really the only two games that you look at and you go, these could be some really good contests. But other than that, it's kind of light week one.
And you know what? And I'm going to catch you a little bit off guard here, I'm sure. I don't know if you saw the ACC put out their week one games, just a graphic on it. Just in week one alone, they've got LSU at Clemson. They've got Alabama at Florida State, Georgia Tech at Colorado, Syracuse at Tennessee, Virginia Tech at South Carolina, TCU at North Carolina, and Notre Dame at Miami. All in the first weekend, Dustin. Props to the ACC. And now maybe their teams need to do that for their strength of schedule come playoff time. But, this Big Ten out-of-conference schedule, I get they're playing 9 conference games, but come on, give us at least something in those out-of-conference games. All right, I've been killing too much time, Dustin. We haven't actually done what I set out to do this segment, which was to look at the schedule. You've had a chance to look at it. What sticks out to you? Who has the tough schedule? Who has the soft schedule?
Yeah, it's really tough because you don't know. But I think looking at this, if you look at Illinois' schedule, and maybe this is why I want to put them in the top 4 tier, they have such a favorable schedule. Their non-conference games are against Western Illinois, Western Michigan, and Duke. Then they play Indiana, USC, Purdue, Ohio State, Washington, Rutgers, Maryland, Wisconsin, Northwestern. You take a quick glimpse of that schedule and you think, based on how they played last year and who they got returning, that could be a 10-win team. Like, there's a lot of winnable games for them on that schedule. So that's a team that I think is going to be really easy to watch, or really easy, really interesting to watch. I think I talked about like earlier, Penn State, outside of their non-conference, they have Oregon. They got to go to the West Coast to play UCLA, Iowa, they still play Ohio State. Maybe you have a sneaky game against Nebraska. So who knows what Michigan State's going to be like. So that's a tough schedule. I don't know if it's the toughest in the Big Ten, but there's a lot of I think there's a lot of candidates on this list. And but to me, by a large majority, to answer your first question, I think Illinois by far has the easiest schedule.
Well, this is why I use that tier one and tier two. It's like, how many tier one games do you have? And this is where I give Ohio State last year played, and I had Michigan among the tier ones. They played Michigan, Penn State, and Oregon. This year, they still get Michigan, obviously. They get Penn State at home, and outside the conference, they have Texas. So I think, again, if Ohio State makes it, they've earned it with that schedule. Oregon has Penn State on the road, but that's their only tier one game. They avoid both Michigan and Ohio State. Again, I'm placing Michigan in tier one. So I think Oregon has a fairly favorable schedule also.
Yeah, I think they need two. Yeah, you have that rivalry game early. They do play Oklahoma State in week two, which and then, yeah, I think Oregon does have a favorable schedule. You know, Rutgers might have a sneaky, I don't even know if it's sneaky tough. They will play Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State. Oregon might have the toughest schedule of that list. And that stinks for Greg Schiano, because guess what? He had one of the easiest schedules in the conference last season and couldn't take advantage of it.
Well, Rutgers, I have a little note by them also that they went from that easy schedule a year ago, playing none of the top tier teams, to playing three of them. But I think, Dustin, it gives you an idea of how within the conference, your schedule could really vary. I'll bring up Michigan also, by the way. We talked about Oklahoma out of conference on the road, but other than Ohio State, who they have at home in the last week of the season, where are they going to get tested? USC on the road? Nebraska on the road?
Yeah. They also have a very favorable schedule, and their byes work out perfectly. Four games, bye. Four games, bye. Final three games. So you look at that schedule in four-game chunks, basically. And so again, we talked about Bryce Underwood. If he can come in and make a quick impact and get some good experience under his belt and get through that first four-game stretch, that second-game stretch is even more favorable.
Yes, I think they are in a good position. And I wasn't even really looking at the schedule when I put Michigan in that tier one. It was more about how they finished their season, plus their history, and the fact that with this, you know, five-star freshman quarterback, the offense can't be as bad as it was again. All right, Dustin, that's got to be the final word for our show. Thank you, as always, for all your great information. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.